Christmas. So the next weekend, when the shooting happened at Carly's, we were all kind of wondering. But no one really believed it was Duncan, because he'd always acted so meek. Carly is Dr. Clifton's daughter. I was trying to put this all together in my head. I wondered if Dr. Clifton was going to recover fully. He was a consulting psychiatrist at the hospital, and he had a busy private practice, I'd heard. So now I can't ever go back to Carly's. Oh? I was trying to keep up. But it's okay, because I don't really like her anyway. She can be okay, but she's mean to people she thinks aren't popular. That I could relate to. Even back when dinosaurs had walked the earth, when I had been in high school, there had been girls and boys like that. Aplenty. So you think it was Duncan who fired into the house? Brad Rodenizer had thought it was likely. She nodded vigorously. I didn't think about it then, but after Tuesday, well, it seems likely, huh? Carly's party gets shot up, and then Carly's dad gets shot? Yes, it did seem likely. Really likely. I debated whether or not to say anything to Philip and Sarah about letting me know when they were together in the house, about leaving Philip's door open, about... But then I thought, I either trust them or I don't. I took a deep breath and said, "Good to see you, Sarah. Tell your mom I said hi." She nodded amiably. "Back in a while," Philip said, and they were gone. In 5 minutes or less, the carport door opened. Robin came in with his hands full of bags. I jumped up to help him put the groceries away. It took quite a while, since our cupboards had been pretty bare. Then I got out what I needed for supper, and I began pounding chicken breasts thin while the butter melted in the microwave. I asked Robin to turn on the oven, but he didn't seem to hear me. I turned around to see that Robin was rummaging through the miscellaneous drawer. A messy catch-all for things I couldn't place logically elsewhere. After watching this in silence for a long moment, I realized this was my cue to say, "What are you looking for?" "I still haven't found my keys. I've been using my spare car key since I got back." He sounded very irritated. I said mildly, "I looked for them the day John went to the hospital. Obviously, I didn't find them. I know a lot of places they aren't." With everything that had happened, the keys had been low on my list of things to worry about.
"Why don't you check your purse?"
Robin was very careful not to delve into my purse without asking. He'd had two sisters.
"It's the only thing I haven't searched."
Since I had chronically interrupted sleep patterns these days, I had done a number of strange things, like put the peanut butter in the refrigerator. Maybe I had had a brain fart and mistaken Robin's keys for my own. Repressing a sigh, I prepared for this major operation. My outsize bag was sure to have all kinds of crumbs and lint inside. I don't put food in my purse, but there are always crumbs. Just another mystery in my life. I spread a sheet of newspaper on the island and turned my purse upside down. A shower of debris rained down on the newspaper. Loose change, old tissues, shopping lists, grocery receipts, a credit card case, a billfold, a change purse. Lipstick, chapstick, a compact, an ancient mint, two pens, a case containing my dark glasses, bright blue frame, crumbs, of course, and Virginia's telephone. Chapter 16. Robin and I stood on opposite sides of the island, staring down at the pile of detritus crowned with a bright turquoise telephone decorated with rhinestones.
"You got a new phone?"
Robin said. He looked at it askance. "That's not mine," I said. Philip came in the front door at just that moment.
"Hey, when's supper?"
he asked, surprised at the absence of any visible preparation. When I didn't answer, he came over to see what we were staring at.
"Where'd you get Virginia's phone?"
He cocked his head, waiting for my, no doubt, simple explanation. I shook my head.
I have no idea. We three regarded the bright phone as if it had been a snake. After a moment, I said, I guess I'd better take it to the law enforcement complex. I can put it in a plastic bag or something. I am just tired of having people come in and out of this house. I didn't add, especially Levon. I felt guilty. He was doing his job. But that was how I felt right now.
This puts the theft of your diaper bag in a whole different light, Robin said thoughtfully.
Wait, what? Of course, I'd told Philip about being in the parking lot of the hospital, but the regaining of a diaper bag had seemed like a small item in the big picture.
Why don't I take the telephone there? Robin said. You've already started supper. You can brief me if you want to, but I figured you'd rather not go. And Sophie is going to wake up sooner or later, and she'll want her mom.
Well, she'll want my boobs anyway, I said absently. I looked up at my husband. He was letting me know he might not return for a while, but he was willing. The relief I felt when he offered told me I should take him up on it.
Hey, should I go too?
Philip was smart enough to pick up the subtext.
And should we check out the phone before we take it in?
Clearly, that would be very wrong, but I confess I felt a moment of temptation. I suppressed it nobly. We can't, I said. That's a police thing. Robin, do you want Philip with you?
Thanks, Philip. But if they decide I need to stay there for some long interview, Ro will need you to help her. And you couldn't do anything but sit in the waiting room at the station if you came with me.
Okay, Philip said.
But I'm willing.
Noted, Robin said. Thanks.
I'll just bag it up and take it to Spakalek.
I handed him a plastic bag from a kitchen drawer. I found a set of tongs, and with careful precision, I lowered the phone into the bag. Probably ridiculous to take such precautions after Virginia's phone had been bouncing around in my purse, but we had to try. Oh, wait! I'd had a thought. I was not a mystery reader for nothing. Don't they use paper bags now? Or,
Robin said, they bag people's hands, but I don't know about telephones. It's already in there. Let's go with it.
Fine with me. It wasn't far to the law enforcement complex, but I didn't know how many people he'd have to talk to. Before Robin could return, I had a call from Levon. He had a list of questions, of course. He opened with,
How did you get the phone? Why was it in your purse?
I have no idea, and I don't know, didn't satisfy him.
What's your best guess, Ro?
Levon was clearly exasperated. Robin came in the garage door. I pantomimed who I was talking to. He shook his head, rolled his eyes, and pointed to the chicken. In return, I pointed to the bowls of melted butter and mixed Parmesan cheese and breadcrumbs. The oven had preheated. My best guess, I said, aware my voice was weary and limp. I was ambling around the room as I talked, and I passed by the mirror near the front door. I rolled my eyes at my reflection. Death warmed over was an apt description. I resolved to avoid mirrors for a while. I always put my purse in the same place on the kitchen counter. I don't remember exactly what kind of purse Virginia carried, but the first time she worked here, she stowed her bag right there beside mine. I remember that. I almost picked up hers by mistake once.
So do you think she popped her phone into your purse to draw it to our attention? Or did she believe she was putting her phone into her own bag?
You asked me to guess. That's all I've got. I hung up. I'd always been a friend of law enforcement, even though I'd met police who hadn't liked me one bit. Anyone working in this field had a dangerous and demanding job. Just at the moment, I was frustrated and angry, convinced Levon wasn't really listening to me.
Ugh!
I said out loud. Nothing I could do about it now. Time to pull my socks up. Robin had coated the chicken and put it in the oven, bless him. I assembled a green salad. Then I chopped up fruit, and I preheated the lower oven for garlic bread. Dinner was on its way to being ready. The pasta and sauce, from a jar, sadly, could be left until the last minute. This was the quickest I had moved in a week. I felt virtuous and efficient. I also felt tired, but I was better, physically. A couple more nights of regular sleep and I'd be back on my feet. Since I'd done all the prep work I could do for the moment, I sank down on the couch and picked up my book, wriggling into a comfortable position. I registered nothing more until I woke as Sophie was just beginning to complain. I shook my head, trying to clear it.
"Ro, you want me to get her?"
Philip called, in no very happy voice, and I saw Robin was hurrying down the hall from his office.
"If you'll change your diaper, I'll be there in a minute," I said.
I stumbled into the kitchen to peek at the chicken, took it out of the oven, turned up the heat on the pasta pot, drank a large glass of water, and went to the baby's room. Robin was jiggling her and walking with her. I looked at them from the doorway, marveling again that I had my own family. This seemed incredible to me still.
"Baby," I crooned. "Mama's here."
Sophie knew my presence meant food, and she was anxious for it. I sat in the rocking chair and prepared myself. "This is like being on a treadmill," I reflected. But I loved her so much that it was worth it. After a few minutes, my mind began to wander. I thought about the night of the murder, picturing everything that had happened. It had worked so well when Robin had suggested I picture everyone in the ICU. Maybe it would be helpful again. This felt oddly like a board game set out for last Saturday night. My token would be in the square representing our bedroom, and it would not move. Sarah's would have gone down the sidewalk. Philip's was stationary, as was Sophie's. I assumed Virginia had been roaming the house, with the nursery monitor in one hand and her telephone in the other, so I pictured her token zigzagging around in an unpredictable way. But then Tracy had arrived on the scene, somehow, steered by some unfathomable purpose. Her token, red, would suddenly appear over the edge of the board. I moved these tokens around in my head. Had Virginia been in the house when Tracy came in? Surely they would have had a noisy confrontation, if that had been the case. I was working on the assumption the two had never met, that Virginia would raise an alarm if she encountered a stranger in our house. That was what I believed, based on nothing but gut feeling. How had Tracy gotten in the house? I should have asked myself that question days ago. Obviously, one of the doors had been unlocked. Had Virginia simply been careless, or had she been complicit? Had Tracy known she could get in? Surely she hadn't been coming by the house, testing the doors. That idea made my skin crawl. Robin came in, moving quietly. He sat on the stool of the rocking chair and whispered, "How did Tracy get in?" And that was another reason we were married.
"Exactly,"
I said, but in a hushed voice. I told Robin what I'd been thinking.
"If she'd been lurking for a few nights, I think we'd have seen her, or one of our neighbors would have," he said.
"The Herman sisters are always out late at night with Chaka. I've seen them when I was up with Sophie."
When Sophie wasn't ready to go back to sleep after she fed, Robin liked to wander around with her in his arms, gently jiggling her and singing to her when he thought I wasn't listening.
So maybe this was the first time she tried to get in.
Assuming she took her sister's car, where is it now?
"I don't think the police have found the car,"
Robin said slowly.
"We would have heard?"
"At the very least, the Coens would have heard and come over to tell us all about it." Robin nodded.
"So we need to find out how she came to be in our backyard at all."
Chapter 17. As if the universe had heard us, but slowly, the landline rang early the next morning just after Philip had left for school. Robin, showered and dressed, picked up the phone in our bedroom. He came into Sophie's room with the phone to his ear, conveying his astonishment by waggling his eyebrows.
"Mrs. Beale,"
he said, looking at me significantly. I pantomimed amazement. Why would Tracy's mom be calling us?
"Yes, I'm Robin Crusoe."
He listened.
"Yes, I'm sure this whole thing has been a shock to you.
Us, too.
What an unexpected turn of events. Moving carefully, I rose to place Sophie in her crib. Robin and I left her to her sleep. He was still talking as we went across the hall. Though I was intensely curious, I needed to shower. I had some errands to run, but mostly I wanted to get out of the house for a while. Though I take short showers, I was slightly surprised to find Robin still talking to Mrs. Beale when I turned off the water.
No, ma'am, we didn't hear anything. I was out of town, and my wife was sick in bed with the flu. That's why we had a babysitter here. Yes, she's still missing. Well, I don't have any idea why Virginia would harm Tracy. Well, I'm not sure she did. We won't know what actually happened until Virginia shows up.
Robin listened, the corners of his mouth turning down. He rolled his eyes at me.
Well, Mrs. Beale, okay, Sandra, I don't know why Tracy had strong feelings for me. And I'm sorry that made her behave like, got her into so much trouble. I'm hoping the police can get to the bottom of her death.
He listened.
Since we're talking, may I ask you a question?
Evidently, Tracy's mom agreed.
Robin continued. I know Tracy left the hospital when she wasn't supposed to. I understand she took her sister's car.
He listened for a minute or two.
Well, we just wondered if the police had found the car.
They haven't.
Well, I agree, that's really strange.
Yes, I'm sure Sharon's missing her car.
Robin did some more listening, made sounds of agreement or sympathy here and there, and finally hung up with obvious relief.
So?
I was anxious to hear a summary.
As you could tell, Sandra Beale is prone to oversharing. I learned that she's divorced, that Tracy was her second daughter, that Mrs. Beale can't understand this whole thing. She didn't know Tracy had escaped from the hospital until hours after it happened. And of course, Sharon didn't know Tracy had walked off the hospital grounds. Sharon was camping. Sharon didn't get home for 2 more days. Then she reported her car missing.
He thought for a minute, reviewing the conversation.
Tracy knew where Sharon kept a spare set of keys, because they were sisters.
What kind of car is it?
A silver Nissan Sentra. Bought at the year-end closeout, so Sharon got a really good deal on it.
Robin shuddered, just a little. Sandra told all this to you?
The man her daughter was stalking.
I shook my head. I'm amazed.
The woman, so stunned by having a daughter as disturbed as Tracy, she was glad to have someone to talk to. Sandra doesn't seem very smart, frankly, and she hasn't been able to track down her ex to tell him about Tracy. She's very unhappy all the way around.
I'll try to feel sorry for her. Just at the moment, I was out of pity. Robin grinned at me.
Don't apologize to me for any lack of feeling. I have sympathy for the woman, but I was counting the seconds until I could get off the phone. And someone at Spakalek gave Sandra Beale my phone number.
He added grimly.
Our landline is unlisted. I'm still wondering who gave it to the reporters who called.
That's really disturbing. Sounds like after talking to Sandra, you could kind of feel where Tracy had gotten the wobbly mind.
He eased down on the bed beside me as I pulled my sweater over my head. I sure don't think most mothers would have wanted to tell me so much, or to talk to me at all.
I nodded in agreement as I began to brush my hair. I wonder why the police haven't found the car. Could Tracy have hidden it somewhere? Why would she do that? I think she'd park it as close as possible for a quick getaway, in case one of us raised the alarm.
We can't know what she imagined would happen.
I tried to figure that out, but gave up very quickly. It made me shiver all over.
I remembered the first time I'd seen Tracy, wearing a catering company shirt, arranging food on the craft service table for the whimsical death crew.
She'd even seemed pleasant.
I wish I'd known who she was right away.
Robin's thoughts had been paralleling my own.
But I'd never seen her, or a picture of her. Just gotten the letters.
To me, my publisher, my agent, my publicist, Celia, and my mother. That one really made me take alarm,
Robin said.
How did Corinne handle that? I couldn't imagine her reaction to something so outlandish.
I had a hard time explaining the situation to her,
Robin said.
He looked very grim.
She'd never encountered a woman like Tracy, someone mentally ill and fixated on her son. Of course, that shook her up.
I'm sorry that your mom had to go through that. She's so nice.
I was sincere.
When you actually met Tracy on the set, you didn't get any vibe from her? Any creepy feeling?
Maybe it's hindsight, but I did sort of register she watched me all the time. Didn't you tell me when she met you, her reaction was almost excessively excited?
I nodded. It struck me as strange, but, you know, people are, especially true crime buffs. I'd figured in the book about the murders in Lawrenceton, simply because I was part of the Real Murders Club, and I'd been able to tell the police that each murder was staged like a famous homicide. Tracy had thought of me, perhaps, as someone who'd sparked Robin's interest in true crime. If Tracy had known that Robin and I would become a couple, maybe she would have leaped across the craft service table with a knife. She'd done the leaping and stabbing later in my home. When Tracy had tried to kill me in my own kitchen, I had grabbed her ankles and toppled her to the floor. In the process, she'd fallen on her knife. Her injury had been serious, but she'd recovered. Now, when I thought of the image of Tracy standing in the same room where my helpless child lay sleeping, I wished that I had killed her that day in my kitchen. It was not the first time I'd thought that. The maids rang the doorbell then, and I let them in.
I'm calling a security company, Robin said suddenly and rose to his feet.
When he'd made a decision, Robin moved quickly. By the time I'd had a quick discussion with our mother-daughter cleaning team, the telephone book spread on the kitchen counter was open to security, and Robin was having a conversation.
Then we'll see you later today,
he said. And after a second of listening, he hung up. He nodded at me, satisfied with his progress.
Spartan Shield security is coming around 2 o'clock,
he said. That was quick.
He had a cancellation,
Robin said. Sounded like a standard face-saving strategy. How'd you pick that one? I said.
I remember the Finstermeyers got their system from Spartan.
Robin went off to his office whistling. He'd made a solid move toward protecting his woman and his baby. He felt strong. I smiled as I sat down at the counter to plan my day. At least I could do so with a pleasant sense of relief. It'll be good to have an alarm system, I thought, as I put my library books in my cloth bag. Swapping day was always fun. It was so pleasant to come home with books I'd selected, like the prospect of diving into a cool pool on a hot day. I topped off Sophie, so to speak, so I could stay away longer. I needed some me time. I put the monitor on Robin's desk and waved almost cheerily. The maids were working on the kitchen, and it was beginning to look orderly and shining. They certainly didn't need my supervision. I'd wondered if my first trip to the library as a civilian would be a little awkward, but I had no way of anticipating how very awkward it would be. Perry Allison was at the desk, busy with a line of patrons. Perry gave me a little wave, but he also looked as though he wanted to tell me something pretty urgently. He couldn't leave his post with patrons standing there, so after I set my books in the return bin, I went over to the new bookshelves, ready to browse. Just as I began looking, would the new Karen Slaughter be in? The media specialist, Janie Spellman, strode around the end of a set of shelves and almost collided with me. This would not have been notable. Janie was always in a hurry, but she made it an incident by flinching away from me as if I had cooties. Killer cooties. Why are you here? She gasped.
To check out books,
I replied. I could feel my eyes narrowing. I had what Robin called my about-to-be-mad face on. But weren't you arrested? I was genuinely confused.
I got robbed. Why would I be arrested? For that woman.
I spread my hands to tell her she'd have to give me more information.
Since that woman, died in your house?
I was exasperated, and I didn't try to hide it. But I kept my voice low because I was in the library.
Janie, could you have worked with me even a week and not known I would not kill someone? Can you possibly imagine that I would bash in someone's skull? Also, the body wasn't in our house, but in our backyard. Believe me, we'd like to know who killed Tracy just as much as everyone else. Maybe even more.
Janie seemed flustered by my counterattack, so she simply didn't acknowledge it. She did a little sidestep to get around me with no touching, murder cooties, and then she zoomed over to the door to the employees' break room. I was disgusted to discover I was so angry there were tears in my eyes. It makes me even angrier when I feel the prickle of tears. It sends the wrong signal. I dabbed my eyes surreptitiously, kept my back straight, and finished picking out my books. I felt that every eye was on me, weighing my guilt or complicity in the death of Tracy Beale and the disappearance of Virginia Mitchell. I knew I'd been an innocent bystander, and I knew Robin had been in another state. Now I realized the gossip mill was grinding overtime. My dignity was intact when I put my books on the checkout desk. Perry said, "Don't pay any attention to Janie. She's a drama bitch, and she's never been your fan."
"Why?" I asked, because I couldn't stop. "I never did anything to her."
I winced when I heard myself whining like a child. "Robin," Perry said, looking at me as if I should have known.
"What about Robin?"
"She wanted him. Famous novelist, right up her alley."
"But he was already dating me when she began work here. I don't believe he ever even looked in her direction."
"I think she's starring in her own movie," Perry said. "Everyone looks at the heroine."
"Huh. Well, sorry, Janie, but Robin is mine forever."
The idea of Janie being motivated by envy was, I'm ashamed to say, a real boost to my spirits. I was smiling when I got in my car, but I wasn't a few minutes later when I picked up Robin's suit at the dry cleaners. Mrs. Sung served me with great speed as if she wanted me out of there. When I got cash from the ATM at my downtown bank, the drive-in teller was looking out her window with her eyes wide. I took the scenic route home because it felt so good to be somewhere besides our house and the hospital. The shooting had not diverted public attention as much as I had hoped. I should have figured we'd come in for our share of suspicion. My childhood friend, Amina, was sitting in the park behind our little civic center. The moment I saw her, a memory I'd been groping for snapped into focus. I pulled into the parking area and walked over to Amina's bench. She looked up when she saw me approaching and pointed proudly to her daughter, who was going down the slide all by herself. Megan, now 3, was adorable, with Amina's clear complexion, shiny hair, and big smile. I was Megan's godmother and Amina's friend, though my relationship with Amina had hit some speed bumps. I wasn't sure my schoolmate was willing to put in the work to relaunch our friendship. It was time to find out.
"Hi," I called.
Amina gave me a reserved sort of smile, but Megan waved with enthusiasm.
"Miss Rowe, look at me."
After she went down the slide, she swung herself along the low monkey bars, 3 in a row. I was duly impressed. "You're strong, Megan," I said.
"There's Susie."
Megan ran over to play with her newly arrived friend at the sandpit. Susie's mom sat down by the girls. I joined Amina on the bench, and for a moment, I simply enjoyed the sun and the quiet. But I had to open the conversation, to begin to work my way around to my goal.
"How you doing, Amina? What's the progress on the divorce?"
"Hughes hired a lawyer from his firm, one who specializes in divorce litigation," Amina said, her voice bitter. What else did she expect? I thought to myself.
"Did you think he'd do anything different?"
I said as gently as I could. I hoped we could sign forms online and get it over with, for a couple $100, she said. After all, I agreed to share custody of Megan with him, and I thought the alimony I asked for was reasonable. I was doubtful that a couple could get a quick online divorce if there were children or alimony involved, but what did I know? I guess lawyers are allergic to filing cheap online forms, I said. What are you going to do? I've talked to Brian Pascoe, Amina said. He's got a great reputation. He's who I'd go to. He said he was a friend of yours. That's stretching it a little, but we're friendly. Brian was sharp as a tack and very aggressive. He was exactly who Amina needed. Megan, do not pick up that stick, Amina yelled. So suddenly, I jumped. Megan looked guilty and dropped the offending stick immediately. Susie's mother looked up from her cell phone. Sorry, she called. I'm putting it in my purse. Phones are an addiction. Amina waved back in acknowledgement. Gotta watch out for sticks, she said quietly. Or, you'll put an eye out, we said simultaneously, and we laughed. That had been the standard opinion when we'd been young. Do you think you'll stay here in Lawrenceton? I haven't decided, Amina said heavily. She looked depressed. I have help with Megan here. My mom just loves her to death, and now that Mom sold the shop, she and Dad have a lot of time to spend with Megan. She got him wound round her little finger. Amina's smile looked both fond and proud. Sure she does, I murmured. Amina resumed her train of thought. If I move to Atlanta, I could get a good job at another legal firm. My former boss said he would give me a great recommendation, but that would be too far for my parents to commute to babysit every day. I'd have to put Megan in a daycare, and that's really expensive. Could you find a job locally? I had no idea what the job market in Lawrenceton was like. I'd held the library job since I'd graduated from college, a long, long time ago. There's an executive secretary job open at Pan Am Agra, and I'm really qualified for it, Amina said. And there's daycare there, as you know, of course. Amina looked self-conscious. My first husband had instituted the daycare. I'm just not sure I want to become a small-town girl again. I had nothing to say to that. If the choice had been mine, I would stay local in a second, especially with daycare provided at my place of work. But that was me, and as I'd learned when I was pregnant, Amina and I were nothing alike any longer, if we'd ever been. I began carefully framing my next question, which had been my purpose when I'd seen Amina, but she forestalled me. They find that Virginia Mitchell, she said, so abruptly that I jumped a little. Not yet. So we were on topic unexpectedly, courtesy of Amina. Your mom recommended Virginia to my mother, and I couldn't remember how your mom had met her. Virginia specializes in new moms now, but she used to sit for the elderly, too, Amina said. For a while, Virginia sat full-time with Mimi Day. Patricia Day, called Mimi by her descendants, had been a very exciting grandmother. She'd cursed in front of us children, she'd worn dangly earrings, and she'd smoked like a chimney. Volatile but funny, she'd been an exclamation point in my traditional childhood. I'd never met anyone like Mimi, who'd been married 3 times. I was sad when a stroke laid the grand old lady in bed forever. I was a new widow then, I said. I guess that's why I didn't remember the details. I'd dropped in to Miss Patricia's house a couple of times, but the visits were hazy. I'd been too grieved to take on any more sorrow. Right, Amina said, and was silent for a moment to acknowledge my hard time. Well, I couldn't come too often, but I do remember Virginia. She was good with my grandmother, put up with all her bad language and temper. The boyfriend was the big problem. Your grandmother had a boyfriend? I was startled. Sure, Miss Patricia had been a firecracker, but I'd hardly have thought. Amina laughed long and hard.
No. Virginia's boyfriend. He came by the house? Or called her too much?
He went to jail. It was a big drama.
I could sure understand that.
For what?
Burglary, I think. From a tool shed, but it was expensive stuff. A circular saw, a jackhammer, things like that. As far as I knew, my father had never lifted a finger to do home repair, but I knew Amina's father had, so I took her word for it that tools could be worth stealing.
And that was while Virginia was actually working for your grandmother?
You bet. It was the most interesting thing that had happened to Mimi in a year. She ate it up.
So what was Virginia's reaction?
She was really upset, of course. She went to bail him out, so she called my mother to sit with Mimi. I don't know what happened after that.
She came back to work, though?
Yes, but after another month, Mimi died, so Virginia was out of a job. But my mom thought the world of the woman, and she gave her a good reference anytime she was asked.
Virginia's mother told the police Virginia had broken up with her boyfriend 3 months before, I said.
I guess he's out of jail?
Amina shrugged.
I have no idea.
He had an old movie name, maybe Harrison Ford, like the Star Wars guy, something like that.
I nodded, wondering how close she'd gotten to the correct name.
I made myself remain 5 more minutes, talking about this and that, until I glanced at my watch and told Amina it was time to feed Sophie.
Come by to see her, I said, and Amina looked pleased.
Megan loves babies, she said.
Maybe we will.
Chapter 18. When I got home, the maids had left. It was time to take care of Sophie. When that was done, I told Robin everything Amina had said.
Do you think the police know all this? I asked him. Because they haven't said a word about the boyfriend except to say Mrs. Mitchell said they weren't together anymore. Moms don't always know.
I tried not to think what that might mean for my future with Sophie.
Robin didn't get as excited as I thought he would.
The boyfriend may still be in jail,
he pointed out.
Or they may have truly broken up after the arrest. The police said so, right? That she dated some new men?
I was sure I'd learned a vital clue. I was reluctant to hear anything different. I turned to fill my glass with water. I had to remember to keep pouring the fluids in, since so much fluid was going out of me.
It would be great if we could know exactly what had happened and where this guy is now,
Robin said.
I wish Amina had been more certain about his name. But since the police have Virginia's phone, they'll know if Virginia was still talking to this man. By the way, I had a strange phone call from the program chair at the Uppity Women Club.
My face flamed. Strange? How so? I was an uppity woman, though my life hadn't permitted me to attend the last few meetings. Up until this moment, I'd been proud to be part of a group of openly active, smart, and assertive women, a revolutionary basis for a club when it had been founded. I could only think of one reason the program chair would call: to cancel Robin's talk. I had to fight the impulse to track down the women involved and beat them up. I was snarling inside with rage at the very idea. When I was sure my voice would be normal, I said,
"Why did she call?"
She called to emphasize the fact that I was very welcome to come to the club to speak, as if I'd heard otherwise.
Enormously relieved, I downed a large glass of water and took Sophie back to her changing table. Her face was so innocent, so guileless. I felt like a traitor for thinking about anything but her. Sophie, your mom and dad are between a rock and a hard place, I told her. But don't worry, we're gonna come out of it okay. With Sophie settled on the kitchen island in her infant seat, Robin and I ate tuna salad and 3 bean salad for lunch, with a sleeve of Ritz crackers lying on the counter between us. Robin abandoned thinking about Virginia Mitchell's possible boyfriend to descend deep into book thought, so he didn't say much while he ate. That left me free to read the newspaper. After we'd finished, Robin cleaned away the leftovers and shot off to his office. I put Sophie to bed, and then I returned to wipe off the island.
I picked up one of my library books with a sense of happy anticipation. The novel was so immediately intriguing, I was startled when the doorbell rang. Who now? Then I remembered that the Spartan Shield representative was supposed to give us an estimate for an alarm system plan. Robin, the security people are here, I called as I went to the door. I felt this was his project, so he should be on hand to answer questions. Robin was obviously excited and interested about this new toy, and he was halfway to the door when I opened it. Mr. Petrosian? I was dumbfounded to recognize the coroner, now wearing a khaki shirt with a golden shield on the left side of the chest and Arnie embroidered on the right. Robin looked from Arnie to me. Robin, Mr. Petrosian is also the coroner, I explained. He was here the other night. There was an interesting moment while Robin absorbed this startling fact.
Please, call me Arnie, Petrosian said. He stepped forward with a smile and a handshake for both of us. Being the coroner is only a part-time job. Installing security systems is what I do for a living.
I guess it ties in together, I said.
Robin said, Arnie, tell me what you think we need. Under the circumstances, I know we don't have to explain why we want the system. First, I'm gonna have a look at your house, your grounds, your windows and doors, and then we'll sit down to talk about what you really need,
Arnie said briskly.
Anybody else in the house? I don't want to walk in and scare someone.
The baby, I said. She's asleep in her room, the last one on the right down the hall.
I won't wake your little girl, I promise,
Arnie said, with a gleaming white smile as he began making a circuit of the doors and windows. We seemed to have an abundance of both. I'd never remarked on that before. Robin and I sat side by side on the couch, glancing at each other from time to time. Though I was holding my book and he was fiddling with his phone, we were both more interested in what the coroner/security expert was doing. I don't know what Robin was thinking about, but I was hoping that I felt safer after Arnie had done his magic. I was also hoping that Robin wouldn't waste any more time feeling guilty. That was nonsensical. Arnie carried a clipboard with a form on it, and from time to time he made notations. He also tested the lock on one of the windows, and I was dismayed to see that the actual lock mechanism was loose. I could only be surprised intruders hadn't been strolling in and out. Arnie hummed while he worked, a tune I couldn't identify. It wasn't irritating. In fact, it was pleasant. He made a circuit, ending up in the living room again. He walked into the kitchen and went to the door.
The garage door, right?
He said, as he opened it. I dug my elbow into Robin's ribs. Robin glared at me. I mouthed, "How did he know that?" Startled, Robin looked at Arnie, who'd opened the door to step into the garage. It could be he's a master of floor plans, I thought. Or it could be that somehow he'd noticed that detail when he'd been here after Tracy was murdered. But I couldn't recall that door being called to his attention in any way. Wait, he'd said something about knowing the previous owners. After a few minutes, Arnie was seated opposite us, ready to get down to business. I had made the ritual offer of a glass of water or a cup of coffee, and just as politely he had turned those down. Arnie began explaining all the security options. Motion sensor cameras outside, alarms on the windows and on the doors. And if we wanted, we could opt to look on our computers to see who was at the door. Robin brightened, since any new gadget was shiny to him. But I gave him a dampening look. Did we really need that? I wanted the entire yard, front and back, lit up after my experience of the week before. But lights that would stay on all night were out of the question, since they'd be a pain for our neighbors and for ourselves. Instead, we got motion sensor lights. Could our cat set them off? I asked. Sometimes, when I was up with Sophie, I heard the sound of the cat passing through its little door at very odd hours. Arnie assured me he could set the sensitivity of the lights to go off only if the moving object was larger than Moosey.
How long have you had a security company?
Robin asked. I recognized an indirect approach when I heard one.
Must be 10 years now.
Arnie's head was bent over the form while he figured out our cost, and I saw that his intensely black hair was threaded with some silver. Did you know the previous owners of this house? Lori and David Martinez? Arnie looked up, his pen poised above the form.
He worked at Pan Am Agra. Lori was a nurse at Dr. Graham's office.
He looked down again.
When my wife got sick, Dr. Graham was her doctor. We saw Lori all the time. After Helena passed, we got to be friends.
Did Arnie mean he and David and Lori were friends? Or was his friendship strictly confined to Lori? At least such a friendship explained why Arnie knew the layout of the house so well. After some more discussion about our options, Robin signed a contract with our coroner/Spartan Shield security expert. We were excited about the transformation of our home into an impregnable fortress.
I'll be over tomorrow with my assistant, and we'll get you all fixed up,
Arnie said, standing.
I think I have all the components I'll need, but I'll check as soon as I get home.
When Philip breezed in, I told him about the Spartan Shield security system. They'll be here tomorrow afternoon, I said, with all their stuff.
That's great. I want to watch them install the sensors.
Philip tossed his head to throw back his hair. It looked uneven and messy to me, but Philip could wear his hair like he wanted. I picked my battles. They're supposed to get here at 2:30, but I'm sure you'll be home in time to watch at least part of the work. Oh, by the way, I warned Philip that our security expert was none other than the coroner. He was indignant.
How can he have two jobs?
The coroner is elected, and the job doesn't pay enough for anyone to live on, I said. Most coroners have another full-time job, like funeral director. But the job can be anything, like a salesperson at Lowe's or a beauty parlor operator.
That's just not right, Philip said.
I agree, but that's the way it works in Georgia, and a lot of states. Philip shook his head.
People,
he said, disillusioned.
At least he hadn't said grown-ups.
When my brother had gone to his room, presumably starting his homework, I admitted to myself that this was only one of many things about the adult world that Philip would think were not right. The next day, I took advantage of Sophie's nap time to visit John at home. His doctor had let him go the day before, in the afternoon. On the way, I stopped off at Mother's favorite deli bakery and bought assorted salads, some containers of soup, and some rye bread, John's favorite. Mother was pleased. Though she scolded me, I could tell she was relieved to have some ready-to-eat food in the refrigerator. I hugged her because she looked depressed and ill, as if she was the one who'd been stricken. Mother held me for a moment without speaking, and I knew she was struggling not to cry. I can't tell you how unusual that was. John's in the den, she said, and stepped back, her weak moment over. I followed her into the den to find John lying on the couch, staring at the ceiling. The television wasn't on, and he didn't have a book nearby. This was as unusual for John as depression and emotional displays were for my mother. This was not the joyful celebration of homecoming that I had expected. I perched on the ottoman, midway between them. Mother resumed her seat in her favorite armchair and picked up some needlework. Mother hadn't done needlework since, well, since forever. Though I was looking at it upside down, the piece appeared to be an alphabet sampler. Obviously, she was employing it as an excuse to sit and watch John. I could understand why. John looked bad. His complexion was pasty, his face slack, and he wasn't lying there like someone who was going to jump up eventually. He seemed to be on the couch to stay. Hi, stepdad, I said, doing my best to sound cheerful. I know you're glad to be out of that hospital.
I have to go back to the doctor tomorrow,
he said listlessly. To mask my anxiety, I rattled on about the baby and her magnificence and quitting my job and getting the security system. Anything to fill in the awful silence.
Mother gave up any pretense of working on the square and dropped it in her lap. She tried to respond, but couldn't muster much energy. Since she thought Sophie was the world's most important citizen, this was really a bad sign. I had a brainstorm. I knew what would really interest John. I gave my mother a narrowed-eyed look to indicate I was about to do something she wasn't gonna like. John, you were at your family reunion when Philip and I found the body in our backyard, I said.
What?
John looked startled, and I realized he didn't know anything about events on McBride Street.
Whose body?
I told John the entire story of the night Tracy had been killed, the inexplicable absence of Virginia Mitchell, my illness, Philip's steadfast help, the horror of the body, the threatening storm, the shooting, and my subsequent discovery of Virginia's cell phone. John did look much better when I'd finished, and it wasn't my imagination. He was engaged and his mind was working.
So I was lying there in the hospital while people were getting shot outside, he said. I'm having a hard time believing that happened here in Lawrenceton. What's happened to the boy, Duncan?
I don't know. I assume he's in the hospital. Probably not ours. Under police guard. Susan got him in the abdomen.
Have the police told you anything about Virginia's phone records?
No, and I don't think they're likely to. I tried to come up with some reason. I simply had to know who Virginia had been talking to, but there was no argument that would persuade Levon I had any right to have that information. I did tell John my theory of how the phone had come to be in my purse. What do you think? I asked. John said,
Ida, can you put another pillow under my head? I'm having a hard time seeing Roe.
Mother shot from her chair and got a larger pillow. John eased himself up while she positioned the pillow so he could look at me directly. Mother sat down again, hiding a smile.
Either she wanted it to be found, or she put it in your purse by accident,
John said.
Of course, the man who took your diaper bag thought it was your purse, and he was sure the phone was in it, not yet discovered. So his name is in that telephone.
I never put that all together, I said. Motherhood's made me stupid. I'll bet you're right.
After all, how many purse thefts do we have in Lawrenceton in a year?
John continued.
Not many, my mother said. I'd know.
Mother has close ties to the Chamber of Commerce, and she'd be among the first to hear about any negative statistics. We discussed the crimes, the murder, the disappearance, the shootings, for another 30 minutes. Then John said,
Looks like I'd better come to your house to see the scene.
Whenever you feel you're up to it. I glanced at Mother, who was giving me a very significant look. If the doctor says it's okay, I added hastily. By the way, I brought you something to read. I reached into the reusable grocery bag to retrieve New Developments, Old Crimes. How Today's Forensics Can Shed Light on Murders of the Past.
Haven't read that one,
John said, sounding very pleased. I knew he hadn't been reading much of the literature that interested us both, since my mother took a very dim view of our mutual interest in crimes of the past. And since Sophie's birth, I'd stuck to conventional mysteries. But I'd figured John needed a solid distraction. I was delighted at his pleasure. My job here is done, I thought, and I rose to say goodbye. I'd had the vague conviction that if John didn't react to my stories, I would have been sure he wasn't going to recover. Robin was glad I'd returned, because he was trying to keep a plot twist from the new book fixed in his head. The second I took Sophie from her bouncer seat, he made a beeline for his office. For about half a minute, I wondered why I'd been so determined to stay home with Sophie. I had a moment of wishing I had hours free from the necessity of being tethered to my baby's needs. But I reminded myself that, A, this was only one phase of Sophie's life, and B, we would all feel better when our sleep was regular. I'd gotten up with her twice the night before, though that was getting increasingly rare. And that, C,
Someday, Sophie would accept another food source. I bundled her into the stroller and set out for a walk. It was a mild day, sunny and clear, but there was a tang in the air that warned me we'd all have to bundle up soon. The nights were already cooler. I felt dismayed at the prospect of maneuvering Sophie into still more layers of clothing, but that was in the future, and I was going to enjoy our excursion. I talked to Peggy Herman and Chaka, who sniffed Sophie again with interest. From his yard, Jonathan called hello. Lulu was with him. She barked at me so vigorously, I thought she might have a fit. Sophie seemed to enjoy the change of scenery. When we got home, she fell fast asleep. Robin didn't emerge from his office for lunch, which sometimes happened. So I ate all by myself with a book propped up in front of me, and I enjoyed every minute of it. Chapter 19. Robin was fast enough to abandon his work when the Spartan Shield team, consisting of Arnie Petrosian and an assistant, arrived with several boxes and bags and tools. Robin was ready for some stimulation outside of his own head. I had very little interest in the physical process of making our house secure. As long as the result worked, that was good enough for me. I played with Sophie when she got up, fed her out on the patio discreetly draped, and went in to greet Philip when he came home from school. He brought Sarah, Joss, and Josh with him. After they'd all said hello and admired Sophie, Philip ushered them outside to see the site of the murder. This wasn't my favorite choice for an activity, but I knew it was only natural, so I didn't comment. They were back within 10 minutes, because, after all, what was there to see but a yard? No clues, no bloodstains, no corpse, only a possibly deaf cat up in the mimosa tree. Philip poured drinks and actually prepared a snack for his guests. I tried to, very casually, glance sideways as he put items on a tray on the island, but I was very interested to see what he'd served. I identified Triscuits, Ritz crackers, and a block of sharp cheddar on a cutting board with a couple of knives. He added the bowl of grapes I'd washed earlier. As a final flourish, he put a stack of napkins beside the bowl. Not bad. I sat on the floor with the baby, singing the Itsy Bitsy Spider and the other babyhood hits. No singer me, but Sophie had never seemed to care, and I kept my voice very low. I didn't want to embarrass my brother. The kids observed the security installation team with great interest. Josh and Joss remembered that Spartan Shield had installed their own security measures, and they said hello and had a bit of conversation with Arnie. Neither twin seemed to know the assistant, who wore an ill-fitting khaki shirt matching his boss's. "You didn't come to our house when we got our system," Joss said, when the assistant was within talking distance. "You knew with the company?" He gave her a fleeting smile before he turned away. Over his shoulder, he said,
"No, just back at work."
Philip and his friends lost interest when it became clear the installation would take more than an hour or two. They all decided to go to Sarah's house to play ping pong. When Philip was on his way out, he said,
"Not a school night, Ro."
"Got you. 11:30, please." I stood in loco parentis to my brother, and sometimes that was an uneasy position. It's probably good training for when Sophie is a teen, I thought, though I couldn't imagine such a thing just now. The next time the assistant walked through the living room, I said, "Are you all through in the baby's room? I'd like to put her down for a nap."
"I'll ask,"
he said in a friendly way. He went out to the truck to retrieve something. When he came back in, I could hear him asking Arnie my question. Arnie popped out from Sophie's bedroom to tell me he was through with her windows. I was glad to stow my sleeping daughter. I wandered back to the living room aimlessly. It was hard to settle down to anything while the two men were in the house. Even Robin had gotten bored and returned to his office. I sifted through the mail that had accumulated.